Baron Davis joins us on Sports Byline, point guard who played 15 seasons with the Hornets, who drafted him as the third overall pick in the 99 draft. And he also played for the Warriors, the Clippers, the Cavaliers, and the Knicks. And he played his college ball at UCLA, where he was an All-American. And he jumped to the NBA after his sophomore year. After an outstanding college and pro career, he has also been equally successful off the court in film, entertainment, and also in business in general. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But, Baron, you were born in L.A. You grew up in the South Central area. Your grandparents raised you on 85th Street. Tell me a little bit about the neighborhood.
You know, just growing up, I would say 85th Street was kind of like a safe street where it was more, you know, grandparents and parents and kids on the street. It was across the street from South Park Elementary School. And, you know, for me, growing up in South Central Los Angeles, you know, outside of 85th Street, you know, it was almost like the real world was, like, right in your face, live and direct. And so for me, growing up on 85th Street, it was a direct path to the basketball court. And, you know, it really allowed me to start dreaming and take my journey.
That wasn't always the way it was for most kids that came out of South Central. What kept you safe? What were the influences in your life that sent you down the right path instead of the wrong one?
Well, I would say my grandparents were huge influences in my life because, you know, they were the one solid thing. You know, they were the one thing that you could be sure that they would be home. You could be sure that they would, you know, love you and take care of you. And, you know, I think for me, that's all we really needed was that opportunity to have a place to live, you know, to be loved and be allowed to, you know, kind of go about and figure out who you want to be early in your life.
You know, the generation gap between your grandmother and you as a young kid, it makes it kind of special when I see that you were kind of instrumental or they were instrumental in pushing you to play basketball. That's a little bit different. What was the reason for her pushing you that way?
You know, it started with just like, you know, them recognizing the love, me having a love for basketball. My grandfather building me a basketball court for Christmas. I want to say on my fourth Christmas. And, you know, from that point, they didn't really need to push me to do anything. You know, it was whatever they, you know, I always say my grandfather could have gave me a baseball or a bat or a football, and I probably would have went all the way there because of that. It was the fact of the matter that he was paying attention to what I liked, and he built that basketball court. And after that, I think more the thing about my grandmother, she was trying to get me off the court because I was on the court so much. So, you know, 9 o'clock at night, 5 o'clock at night, you know, I'm, you know, 5, 6 years old. She's snatching me out the backyard, turning the lights off. She's like, boy, you better get some sleep. But, you know, she just knew I loved the game, and they allowed me to do that.
There is not a better scene, I think, in sports. And tell me what it was like for you when it's maybe 9 o'clock at night. Certainly in Los Angeles, there's not the humidity. But I've talked to other players from urban areas, and they talk about 90 degrees, 90% relative humidity, and a blacktop of 5 shirts and 5 skins. What was it like for you?
You know, for me, I did a documentary on the Drew League, and it was like, you know, L.A. has the perfect weather, but, you know, we have the worst street ball, you know, like, so we don't really have street ball. But growing up, you kind of play at the courts that's closest to you. And the fear of that is because when you're growing up, was the fear was because of the drive-by shooting. So you don't really see people out, you know, just playing basketball freely, you know, running games like you would in New York. You know, for instance, you got West Fork, you got Rucker, you got this park, you know, and people are constantly running pickup games. And South Central, you know, you really kind of had to, like, be somewhere where, you know, you weren't in gang culture or in a gang combat area. And so that really drove, you know, me and drove other people to the gym, which made us really start to hone our skills in, you know, as kids earlier than, you know, more so the street ball thing. But taking the street ball elements and the anxiety of playing, you know, in fear or playing having to look over your shoulder, you know, I think that's where you kind of get, like, that creativity and, you know, that anxiousness or that energy.
Why UCLA over any of the other schools that wanted you, Barron?
UCLA for me was home. My grandmother was here. I wanted her to see me play. For me, Duke probably would have been the best basketball decision for me as a basketball player. But I felt for, the culture of L.A., for L.A. as a whole, like, we were always getting a black eye as far as, like, not having, talented players come out of L.A. And so I wanted to be the pioneer of that, and I wanted to stay home and, be around these young kids and these young guards and young high school players and support them and get them together at UCLA. So for me, it was more about the importance of, being an L.A. basketball player and what that meant, and then also playing in front of my grandmother.
What was the deciding factor? Because young, talented players in basketball, have to make that decision, go or stay at the school they're at. But for you, what was it after 2 years at UCLA that made you feel comfortable about going to the NBA?
Well, I had been playing against NBA players for the last 4 years. And, when I hurt my knee my freshman year, it was, a lot of people didn't think that I would make it back. And so, once I was able to make it back and be at full stride with my knee, my sophomore year, I was like, really, I'm really ready for the NBA. I wanted to stay another year because I really wanted to win an NCAA championship. With UCLA, I didn't feel like my mission was completed, but at the same time, I was anxious to live out my dream, anxious to play against, the best of the best. And, every year, some legend was retiring. So I was like, I want in. And I think this is the best way for me to grow as a basketball player. And I didn't really think that, I had much growth left at UCLA.
You were drafted by the Hornets.
Basketball-wise.
Yeah, you were drafted by the Hornets with the third pick in the 99 draft. The team, of course, played a year a little later on in New Orleans. And you led the Hornets to the playoffs your first 5 years. What was missing from that team to take them to the next level?
Well, I would say, just another bona fide all-star talent or all-star player. That as well as just, having the right pieces. What I thought that we had is, we had some really good we had really good role players, really good complementary players, and good basketball players, good basketball minds. What we didn't have was, that additional superstar, that next level talent that, was a game changer. And so, when you're matching up, against some of the elite teams and some of the superstar driven teams, you're just outman. You're outman at certain positions. And but I thought that, we had a good team. It was just, small mistakes here and there, really cost us from moving on in the playoffs in Charlotte.
Barron, when I watched you come into the league, I've seen a lot of players come in, first rounders come in. They don't make it sometimes. But when I watched you, I saw a nice combination. It was the combination, you had the talent, no doubt about that. But you had the maturity and the understanding of where you were in your life at that particular time. And that was very unique to me to watch that. Where did that all come from? Were you as comfortable playing pro ball as you looked like you were?
Absolutely. For me, it was just, finally wanting to be on the court with, guys who were, stronger or, people that I looked up to. But more so, just all my life, I had been the smallest player on the floor. So I've always been a floor general. And so when I got to the NBA, that first year, it was more so like, man, this is it. Like, this is basketball at its greatest form, but it's like, it's simple. Pass the ball to the best player. He's going to shoot. If he gets double-teamed, then I'm open and I get to create and make plays. And I think for me, it was that first year was just really kind of learning who I was and what my routine was. But it was, the games in itself were easy and simplified because, I was on a team where, I was coming off the bench, so it wasn't much pressure or a lot of things asked for me to do.
Baron Davis is with us here on Sports Byline. We got about 30 seconds before we have to break here. Were you shocked by the trade in 2005 to the Warriors?
No, I wasn't. I was actually, I kind of ran its course, with New Orleans. I thought it was a lot of shenanigans with the ownership, and, it wasn't a real focus on, them and what they wanted to do as a franchise. And, I just thought that everything was becoming discombobulated and, just like the time had ran its course. So I was ready to move on at that point when I got to the Warriors.
Baron Davis is with us. When we come back, we'll talk about the rest of his basketball career and also talk about his success in movies and also film and outside of entertainment as well. We do that as we continue across the country and around the world on Sports Byline. Baron Davis has joined us here on Sports Byline USA. 15 seasons in the NBA. Started out with the Hornets. They went to New Orleans, and then he was traded to the Golden State Warriors. And what was your first impression when you take a look and think about Coach Don Nelson?
I always liked Don Nelson because of, the Run TMC days and with Tim Hardaway, Mully and Mitch Richmond. And so I always loved their style of play.
And the other thing, too, is that when you came to the Golden State Warriors, there was that potent backcourt with you and Jason Richardson. And I think you know as well as I do, Baron, chemistry in certain positions, particularly in the backcourt, is problematical at best. Tell me a little bit about how you two guys developed the chemistry that you had.
It was crazy because, that was the first time I played with a real shooting guard. No offense to David Wesley, who was a point guard, a combo guard, point guard turned two guard, but Jason Richardson was 6'6", and, he was actually, he had the size of, could shoot, post up, obviously super athletic, and so it was the first time that I played in the backcourt with a guard that was bigger than me. Which opened up a lot of opportunities for me to actually exploit mismatches against other guards. Jason Richardson was like, for me, I always call him the silent assassin. Athletic, could shoot from anywhere on the court. Great teammate, loved playing defense. One of the best rebounding guards, in our time and in our era. What we didn't expect was, we had this great chemistry, but he got hurt when I first got there. And then, it was really Dunleavy until the Dunleavy-Troy Murphy trade happened. I think that's what really, opened things up for myself and Jay Rich, because we were there with the Warriors when, I would say the last few years of the dog days and nobody remembers. And, it was great to have that opportunity when that trade happened for Jay Rich and myself to just be able to play with other guys that could get us open and didn't have to rely on us to do everything.
The Warriors 2006-2007 season was a very interesting one. You had knee surgery, but you led the Warriors to one of the biggest upsets in NBA playoff history. It was against the Dallas Mavericks. They came into the playoffs with a number one seed. The Warriors were the number eight seed. The difference between the winning records was 25 games, and nobody expected you guys to win. Take me through that series. What was the key to it?
Well, I think the key was the fact that we had, we felt we had advantages, or we were matched up well at the places where they had superstars and the places where they were most potent. And so, really for the first time, it was this, in this new era was a team that was pretty much comprised of guards and forwards in one center, And so a lot of the things that we were doing was really switching pick and rolls and forcing Dirk Nowitzki to put the ball on the floor, which he was, the MVP that year, which he was doing a phenomenal job. But, the worst thing for a 6'11 guy to do is dribble against a 6'4, 6'3 guard, And, I thought Nelly was focused and in tune going into the series, and we actually really felt, we had Dallas' number. We had beaten them, I want to say 7 out of 8 times over the last 2 years, even with lesser squads. And really, once we got in the playoffs, I remember telling Jason Richardson, I was like, dude, when you get to the playoffs, you'll see how it is, dude. That's all I care about. I know you're the type of player. Once you get to the playoffs, it's over. And that's all we kept talking about. And it was never really about Dallas. It was just like, man, we just can't wait to get to the playoffs so we can do what we need to do and perform on this platform. The hype, you know, we were just building it up. We were just building up the story, the energy. So we could have played anybody. We didn't care. We were just happy to be there, and we were hungry. You know, we were hungry to prove that we belong.
Steve Kerr at that time was a television analyst, and he called your performance in the 2007 NBA playoffs outrageous, stunningly athletic, creative, and explosive. Coming from a peer, that's pretty high praise.
Man, you know, coming from someone like Steve Kerr, is, you know, that's the highest praise, and, you know, humbling at the same time. You know, for me, it was like I was coming off a knee injury, and so, you know, it's always like I'm coming off of an injury, you know, sooner than I'm supposed to. But, you know, I was just really in the mentality that, you know, I was really going off adrenaline. You know, that's a big reason why I think we lost the next series, was because, you know, once the adrenaline kind of settled, you know, I was still hurt. I was still recovering from knee surgery, and I pulled my hamstring in the series. So it was just, you know, for me, it was just like floating on a natural high and being able to go out there and you know, have peace with my game and know that, you know, I had the mismatch and you know, it was up to me to deliver, and that's what I was doing.
You finished up your career with the Clippers, Cleveland, and also the New York Knicks. I want to ask you just one question about the Clippers. That market is a market that has two NBA teams in it, and you're either obviously a Laker fan or you're a Clippers fan. What was that competition like between organizations and teams in that market?
Well, I think before I got there, there was no competition. When I got there, at least, you know, people were fans of BD and start paying attention to the Clippers. And then, you know, when we drafted Blake and had DeAndre, and we really started the Lob City, I think people were actually, like, switching over and like, hey, man, like the Clippers are, you know, they're an underdog team, but, you know, they're exciting. And, you know, always in L.A., the Clippers have had an awesome fan base, and awesome fans. It's just they never really had nothing to cheer for. And so, you know, you see it now. It's, you know, it's almost like the roles are reversed. But, you know, L.A. is just a great place for sports, for teams. And, you know, what better place to have two teams?
You tried to make a comeback, and I know that you played in the Drew League, which was, of course, the subject of your documentary, The Drew, No Excuse, Just Produce. Did they have to almost tear the uniform off of you, Barron?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, it's like I'm always – feel that I have something left and feel that I can play because I love the game. And, you know, I appreciate it and respect it. And so, you know, I'm one of those guys that I'm never going to stop playing until somebody tells me, like, hey, man, you got to stop, dude. That's enough.
You remind me of Joe Morgan, the great Hall of Fame baseball player. I had a conversation with him, Barron, and he told me, I started preparing for retirement the first day I started playing. And I got that sense about you because – you've made the transition into another chapter in your life. You've had an increasing role in the film industry. Tell me a little bit about the bug on doing movies and television. Where that bit you?
Well, you know, for me, I think it happened when I was going to private school when I was 13 years old. So going from South Central and then going to a private school like Crossroads, who a lot of the kids' parents were producers or actors and actresses, filmmakers. You know, people who kind of worked in the business, when you go and, you know, hang out with them or spend a night over their house and see what their parents are doing for a living, you know, for me it became fascinating because, you know, I survived off of storytelling. I survived off of books. I survived off of, you know, basketball, you know, just the imagination of basketball. And so for me, you know, it was just a natural thing. You know, when we're in the locker room, when we're around, all we're doing is telling stories and storytelling. So, you know, just taking that and, taking that and just trying to implement that into, you know, the structure and the rhythm of what it means to make stuff in Hollywood.
I know you've appeared in movies such as The Cookout and also guest starred on television's Lincoln Heights and also ABC's The Forgotten. And, of course, you've done a number of other movies as well as The Pool Boys and To Crips and Bloods Made in America. That creative process, tell me a little bit about it. And was there a similarity to the creative process of playing basketball the way you did?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you just have to be meticulous. And, you know, more so what they say, you got to chip away at the iceberg. You got to chip away at the sculpture. And that's every day coming in. And, you know, if it's a story, you know, never leaving a moment, you know, unsolved, you know, kind of taking the idea and following through with the idea. So the idea is actually vetted and, you know, it's just, it's like that. It's like every day you dribble with your right hand, you know that there's an end goal and an end purpose, you know. But, you know, you have to get those dribbles right. You have to get that crossover right because you're going to need space and it's the creativity, you know, in the script. But it's more so the discipline and the day-to-day practices that's going to get you, you know, to your ultimate game, and that's, you know, finishing a script or a pilot, you know, a pilot script or something like that.
We only have a couple minutes left, but I want to tell you something that somebody told me about you. They said that one of the reasons why you're successful in this new business is that you subjugated your ego, meaning that the ego that you had in playing professional sports, when you got into a new business, you were willing to backtrack and learn that business. And not all people slash athletes are willing to do that when their careers came to an end. What was the reason? How were you able to do it? Because not a lot of people will do that.
You know, for me, it's all about, you know, the only way to grow is to learn. And, you know, I always like to, when I walk into a new situation, to eyes wide, ears open, and take two steps back from who I am and to become a student. And so for me, just kind of learning this business, you know, having a company, the Black Santa Company, that, you know, is inspiring, you know, kids and adults through storytelling and characters, you know, I had to go and meet with great creative people, you know, business people, comic book people, kids book people, character designers, you know, and really it's almost like an interview. You're interviewing people to collect data and to find out, you know, who you are and where your niche is. And so for me, it's, you know, always listening and always learning, because it's not about Baron Davis. It's more about the company, the Black Santa Company, and what we can do for other people.
What is it about today's technology that excites you the most? Because virtual reality is coming on strong. There's augmented reality. There's additional technologies. There's podcasts. There's all of this content out there. So what excites you now today, Baron, as you move in to this new area?
So I would say, you know, I'm really excited about the opportunities of VR, the opportunities of AR, AI, artificial intelligence, and, you know, those three things together kind of creating this new space, this new Disney, this new, you know, sporting experience, to really have opportunities to be in a time capsule, a time machine. So, you know, that's where I like technology. I think that, you know, we're just scratching the surface about where we are and where we will be able to go. And, you know, it's almost like we're allowed right now, we're living in a golden era where we can actually start to create new history and new storytelling that will last hundreds and hundreds of years.
We only have 1 minute left. When you think back on your whole career playing basketball, anything, is there anything that's kind of engraved in your mind that makes you smile about what you've done in sports?
You know what? That's a hard question. I would just say the fact that I did it. You know, when I see it's more so when I see the guys that I played against, I see the guys that I idolize or play with. It's like, oh, wow. Like, they, you know, I'm one of them. So to be, you know, one of few and to be in that fraternity, and they're all my heroes and people that I look up to. So, you know, I'm like a kid in a candy store, man.
Baron, I've been looking forward to this interview for a long time because I've respected you not only for what you've done on the court over 15 years, but also what you've done now off the court and where you're growing and the direction you're headed to. Thank you very much for your time. You are welcome here anytime on Sports Byline.
Man, thank you, Sports Byline. I appreciate it. This is awesome.
Baron Davis with us. Again, point guard. He played 15 seasons with the Hornets and also played with the Knicks, the Cavaliers, the Clippers, and the Warriors. He was the third overall pick in the 99 draft. He played his college ball at UCLA, where he was an All-American, and he decided to jump to the NBA after his sophomore year and had an outstanding college and pro career, and now doing successfully in business as well. We've got you on Sports Byline.